I'm really freaked about deleting YouTube. That's where all my screen time is, YouTube. And right. I haven't taken a dump without my phone for 15 years. I don't even know if my rectum works if I'm not holding a phone in my hand. Honestly, I don't know the word. I could be turtle dogging it, a prairie dogging it, turtling it, going to the bath like, oh, I hope I make it. Oh, where's my phone? And I'll risk it and turn around and go find my phone because I cannot sit and not watch car restoration videos or hunting videos. I'm concerned about that one. So I'm talking with here with, I would say, one of my good friends, even though we've only spent, I don't know, 5 or 6 times in person with one another. We see each other at a sort of pastoral event. And we keep up. I really enjoy this dude a lot. I think he likes me, or at least he humors me.
And you a lot.
You like me. You like me a lot. I like it a lot.
Yes.
name that movie.
Dumb and Dumber, of course.
I'm very good. An American classic that an Aussie actually nailed.
Yes.
How long have you been in America, by the way?
27 years.
Okay, so you were how old?
I was 23. So I'm 50. I just turned 50, and so a couple of years ago, I crossed a threshold where I've spent more of my life in the United States than I did in Australia.
Wow. How does that feel? Does it feel like you were abandoning your roots, or was it pretty cool?
You know, there is a really interesting sociological condition that immigrants have, and it's called culture freeze. And you see it clearer in sort of non-English speaking countries. You see it in America, where like a family moves from the Ukraine 40 years ago, and if you visit their house, it looks like Ukraine on the inside, the decor and what they're wearing and the music they listen to and all of that. And then they save up all their money and they go home to visit the motherland. They visit Ukraine and they realize it's nothing like they remember because culture has moved on.
Ah, interesting.
But they have a frozen image of the country that they left. Well, when I visited Australia last year, I have 3 teenage daughters and my wife. I took them to Australia. It's my kids' first time. I've been gone for 27 years. It's really different than the country that I left. And I am a little bit of a culture freeze in the sense that I live in America and I'm reminded every day that I'm not American. Like I'm an Aussie living in a foreign land, you know? But then when I go back to Australia, it's nothing like I remember because it's nearly 30 years on. And you're sort of left with this, I'm not sure where I belong. I'm not sure where my people are anymore. So I did marry an American. And I have 3 half American, half Aussie kids. So the United States definitely feels like my home, my calling, and where I'm going to continue to grow old.
So when you go back to Australia, you don't just get off the plane and say, throw another shrimp on the barbie. You don't just say that immediately. Isn't that part of culture?
It would certainly be most Americans' guess. Interestingly enough, we don't call shrimp shrimp.
You don't.
We call them prawns. And we don't cook them on the barbie.
You don't.
Other than that, it's a perfect euphemism for Australia.
So we've been lied to.
Yeah, you've been marketed to, my friend.
Man, bummer.
You know what that is? It's called Outback Fake House.
Oh, that's what it was. Well, it was, it was Crocodile Dundee, right?
Crocodile Dundee.
Did that movie totally drive Australians crazy?
You know, Aussies kind of liked it. I mean, it was very tongue-in-cheek, and it was very exaggerated, you know. But Aussies liked Paul Hogan. They interestingly didn't like the crocodile hunter for the longest time. They thought he was kind of an idiot. And then when the whole world ultimately fell in love with him, Aussies kind of turned and they decided that, I guess he's okay.
There you go.
And then he died at a young age and it was very tragic.
Was he an Australian by birth?
Paul Hogan? The crocodile hunter? Oh, yeah. Paul Hogan? Absolutely, yeah.
He is Hogan. The crocodile. Oh, no, the crocodile. No. You're talking about
Crocodile Dundee and Steve Irwin, you know, 2 different things. Crocodile Dundee, the first movie was really great. The second was terrible. And I think the third one was the disaster. crocodile hunter Steve Irwin.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, there is no way around. I mean, the guy's handling snakes and wrestling crocodiles. And I mean, you just got to respect it, you know. And he ended up dying with a stingray.
Right.
Shooting him in the heart, you know. But Aussies really warmed up. Aussies always loved Paul Hogan. Aussies took a while to warm up to Steve Irwin.
Steve Irwin, that dude deserved to die, man. I can't believe he lasted as long as he did.
But of all the extreme things he did, the way he died was like being pierced in the heart with a stingray. You know, it's really an anticlimactic death in compared to the different things he did.
What are you talking about? You're talking about this massive animal that he's like, look it up there, mate. Let's just go swing it on it. You're in this 3D environment, and there's a tail that comes up and hits you right in the chest and pierces your heart.
Let me tell you something,
Brian. What do you think was going to happen?
Let me tell you something, Brian Tome. Of the 10 most poisonous snakes in the world, Australia has 9 of them.
Wow.
And he would play with all of them. And then he would wrestle crocodiles the size of freaking dinosaurs.
Yeah, 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 right.
You know, I mean, like, this was anticlimactic in comparison to some of the truly death-defying things that he did.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with Darren, Darren has a he leads a great, great church in Nashville. It's the big dog in the city. It's got who's who in the city and great stuff. And it's kind of crazy. You got this guy from Australia who has been wrestling alligators as well from an early age. That was you, right? Because everyone in Australia wrestles alligators, right?
It's the rite of passage. It's how you become a man.
Well, what was your life like in Australia? Were you like middle class, upper middle class, like artsy type? What was your background like?
You know, I grew up in a very small town on the southernmost point of the mainland of Australia, town of about 20,000 people. And my dad was an electrician. It's very much a blue collar family. And my mum worked with kids with special needs in the education department of the government. And I was one of 3 boys, and I was the oldest. I had 2 younger brothers. We played a ton of sport growing up because in a small town, there was nothing else to do. There's no internet, and we had 2 television channels, and that was it. And so, yeah, I mean, we played every conceivable sport growing up. So, yeah, I was pretty athletic.
When you came to America, I know you said you had the romantic memories of what you thought Australia was like. When you came to America, was it a culture shock or was it just, oh, this is a different place? I'm trying to build here to why you have this passion for the digital stuff. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah. So Aussies grow up on American media. The American media is dominant around the world. And so generally speaking, the rest of the world, and particularly the Western world, have a very developed understanding of American culture. You know, I grew up watching the same kind of television that you did and most Americans did. I watched Sesame Street as a kid. I learned to say the alphabet with an American accent. You know, I watched A-Team and Knight Rider and Fall Guy and all
God
the
bless
same,
America.
Oh yeah, all the same American exports of the 80s. I grew up watching that as well. So when I came to America, it's a little bit like entering a movie that I was very familiar with.
Interesting.
And so knew a lot about American culture.
That's fascinating. I hadn't thought about that. I knew that we export all those things, but I hadn't thought of the impact it would have when you came into America.
Yeah, movies, television, music, fashion, the United States is projecting all of it.
Yeah. So what I wanted to talk to you about, not just to have a reason to hang out with you, because we've already covered, we don't have enough reason. So I don't care what we talk about. So we could talk about whatever, and I'm happy to do that because it's always happy to be with Darren. Well, one thing though is I do have to get a nickname for you because people who I like have nicknames, and you don't have one yet. So I got to figure that out. like Dirt has Dirt. It's really endearing. Everyone knows him as Dirt. How many people call you Dirt? Dirt.
A lot of people call me Dirt.
That's good.
Yes.
I got to figure something out for you. I don't know what it is, but
okay. I'm here for it.
Yeah, but I'm a fan of yours, so I just want to spend time with you. But I also thought you've become sort of the guru, the Christian guru of the most challenging area of our culture, and I want you to talk about it. I'm taking cues from you and leading our church. It's my day job, if you don't know. Welcome to Aggressive Life, and by day I'm a pastor, mm-hmm. and we're leading our church through something you pioneered, which was a digital fast, digital detox, digital reset, whatever word you want. And before we talk about that, let's just talk about the price of our device. What's going on with our device? And I'd like to talk about it maybe from a spiritual lens, because most of us have always already heard some of the stats about how things are really harmful with our device. And by the way, don't turn it off. Don't turn it off. I know this is tough because so many of us are in love with our device. We want to hear anything that's going to tell me to stop using it. Just hang in there. You know, my name is Brian. I'm your friend. I like to have fun. You know that. So let's just hang in here and talk about something that's really important. Let's go back to, like, when did this whole device thing, digital stuff, get sunk in your heart? You've written a book on this. Tell us back to the Genesis.
Yeah, so to your point, we do love these devices, but we hate these devices as well. We have a love-hate relationship with them. The iPhone came out in June of 2007, and I stopped by an Apple store just to hold one, and to my surprise, they had one in stock. And I looked at my wife, and I'm like, this is a sign from God. And can I please get one? She rolled her eyes and slightly nodded. And I held that thing in my hand like, my precious, you know?
Yeah.
And we have been pretty much inseparable ever since. And the iPhone began as a universally positive device. There was no front-facing camera. There was no notifications. There was no social media. There was... The things that have become the most destructive for human life, it didn't begin with any of those things. It was really a utility. It was a tool, and it was augmenting and making our lives better. And that's how it started. But it started also then to be seeping in to different corners and different crevices of our lives. And essentially, the thing that we began having mastery over started to then master us. And you start having people saying, yeah, I think I have an unhealthy relationship with my phone, or I'm spending all of this time doom scrolling, and then when I come up for air, I realize that 47 minutes have evaporated and I've just been looking at cat videos, you know? So, as a pastor, I also want to be thinking through the lens of how are these devices shaping us spiritually? You know, Jesus said in John 10 that the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy, and that Jesus has come to give life and life abundantly. You know, the enemy's playbook is stealing, killing, and destroying. And I look at the impact of smartphones on society. It's somewhere around 93-94% of people have a smartphone in America. Yeah. The average age of getting a smartphone is 11 years old. And in no small way, the enemy is able to steal our time, kill our relationships, and destroy intimacy and friendships and so many parts of modern life. And it may be the most powerful tool that the enemy has ever had to steal, kill, and destroy.
Yeah, I'm probably, you or I are really the perfect age for an exercise that maybe we'll do right now of life before the smartphone and life now. So if you're 25, you couldn't do this exercise. You wouldn't be able to identify how much America has changed. And I'm not talking right now just about the health statistics and the plague of depression, anxiety, and insomnia, without question, that are related to our phone. Actually, we'll start there. I'll name one, then you name one. Like, pictures of America 18 years ago that aren't now. So I'll give the first one. I just mentioned it. 18 years ago, there wasn't an insomnia problem. 18 years ago, I never talked to anybody who had a hard time sleeping at night. Without question, the glow of that screen and what affects with melatonin is effective. That just wasn't a problem. No one was talking about that unless you were 70 and you were that age. Massive issue with people who are young. Never happened before. New thing. Your turn.
Extreme anxiety and eating disorders with 13-year-old girls. Comparison on all of the social media platforms.
inability to say hello to strangers. We don't say hello to people and they don't say hello to us because we actually walk and look at our phone.
Yes. Social boundaries that are constantly violated, where you're talking to someone, the person you're talking to breaks eye contact and stares at their phone.
Yes. Right. Oh my gosh. I'll build on that one. We're going to start doing this little video because a guy sent me this video. It was really good, but I want to blow it out with a professional video crew and everything of a guy. There's just three scenes of him using his Bible like it was a cell phone. You know?
Oh, like, yeah. I've seen this. Yes.
Right. So here's one like that. If you saw somebody sitting on a piece of gym equipment with their Bible, you would beat them up and say, you are a dork. But people actually, we've lost the ability to know how to work in on machines, work in on equipment. Like, I just think that I get to monopolize this piece of equipment for 10 minutes because I did it a set, and now I get to sit here and look at my phone while I don't rest for 45 seconds. I'm going to rest for 3 minutes while I look at my phone and hog it. Never happened.
Right.
Your turn. Right.
All right. A constant, unlimited supply of pornography in your pocket all the time.
Yeah. That's a big one. That's a really big one. Gosh, we probably stop right there because I can't think of another one. You probably can. Go ahead. You already beat me. You got another one?
I mean, walk into any store or walk into a line at Starbucks and every single person is not talking to each other. They're just staring at their devices.
Right.
Go to an airport and no one is talking to one another. I mean, there is an evaporation of social space, of natural embodied interaction.
Right.
Because everyone has their heads buried in a glowing rectangle.
Everyone.
It used to be when that began, it was really weird and you'd like laugh and you'd be like, oh, look at all those people. They're all staring at their phones. And now if someone's not staring at their phone, you're like, what are you, a psycho?
Yeah. We're afraid to look at other people. Yes. Right. All right, I got another one. One just came to me. We have lost brain matter for memory retention.
Yes.
Because we're so in tune with our GPS and our phone, we don't know how to get places we could have figured out before because neuroscientists tell us we've lost brain matter or it's gone hard because it doesn't use it. I'll just plead guilty myself. I went to my daughter's house, drove to her house a couple of weeks ago, and my son-in-law's house. We got a new house a couple of years ago for the first house. I'm like, I don't need put in my GPS. I'll just drive over there. I got to the street, no problem. I drove back and forth in the street three times trying to figure out which one was their house.
Yeah.
And they live 12 minutes away from me.
Yeah.
And it was horrible. I had to text her. I said, sweetie, I forgot which house is yours. What's your address? That's not because I'm dumb. It's because I've become dependent on the cell phone and my brain has changed and it's horrible.
Yeah. All right. I'll tell you one of the most heartbreaking ones that I know of. Young mothers nursing their children, their babies, instead of staring into their eyes and connecting with one another, they're scrolling on their phones looking at social media.
Oh, my God.
I have shared that in church before.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm thankful that when my children were very, very young, smartphones weren't even a thing. Because without someone pointing that out to you, it's probably something that you would naturally do and not even think anything of it, right?
Yes.
But there is something about a mother bonding with their child. The child's looking at their mother. The mother's looking at the child. The mother is stroking their face or their hair or, you know, nursing a baby's boring.
Right.
And we've almost chased boredom out of our lives. And so millions of nursing mothers now latch their child on and they just stare at what everyone else is doing in the world. Is causing a lack of connection and development between a mother and bonding with their child.
Oh my gosh, that's horrible.
I know.
Well,
and so widespread.
Oh yeah. Well, it goes back to that video I want to shoot with holding a Bible. Like, do mothers look at Bibles while they do their child? It would be, I guess, fine if they did. But don't think they do. you know? And that's,
well, you know, the thing is, a lot of nursing is in the middle of the night. And so you're just kind of like sitting with your child, except if something is glowing and it gives you access to be able to look at it all the time. iPhones have an endless amount of visual junk food to look at. Well, and so that's what we consume.
And I would just plead guilty if I was breastfeeding a child, if I was the guy who had that kind of mechanical apparatus and I was breastfeeding a child, I promise you, I would be looking at my phone. Promise you.
And without someone pointing that out to you, that would be the default of everyone in society.
Yep.
But when you also think of what's at stake, you're like, I don't want to be that parent.
Yep.
I want to bond with my child in these sacred years.
Would you say that you have a calling on your life to attack this problem?
I absolutely feel in this season of my life, this is one of my callings. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you identify a moment when that became crystallized?
Yeah. I have three teenage daughters. And a couple of years ago, I took each of them out on a date, as I do somewhat frequently. And I'm close to my girls, Brian. I am so thankful that I'm really close to each of them. And I thought I was, you know, thinking about my dad game. And I thought, you know, I'm going to ask each of my girls, what's dad doing right that he needs to do more of? And what's dad doing wrong that he needs to do less of? And I thought, I'm going to get a pretty good report card here, you know? So I ask each of my girls what I'm doing right. And they all have different things. You know, I drive them to school in the mornings. I make them laugh. I cheer them up. I slip and fall and hurt myself. And they want me to do more of that, you know? All of the things that just sort of entertain them. But completely independent of one another, when I ask them what am I doing wrong and they do less of, they each look me in the eye and they said, I wish you wouldn't spend so much time on your phone. Mm. Wow. And my eldest is a couple of months away from graduating high school. She's going to college next year. We are rounding the end of this season of childhood. And to think that I have squandered some of the most precious times of connecting with my daughters, and I've exchanged that for the triviality of watching people argue with one another on Twitter, or looking at what someone had for dessert in some state, and I haven't seen this person in 6 months. It's just wasting my life looking at this glowing rectangle instead of the most sacred and precious gift of raising these humans. And to think that I switched those was like a wake-up call for me. Mm.
We did the start of our Digital Fast series this last week, which is, I gave you credit, said it was based on your teaching and stuff. Really, really good. I one of the few times I've taken somebody's teaching, just spiced it up with my examples, did a couple things to, you know, to make it biblical, because some of your stuff is just freaking horrible.
Most based on the Quran. Yes.
It was, you know, just really so good. And we were in our pre-meeting, and the guy who runs all the artistic stuff for the service, trying to charge everybody up for why we're doing this, all the people who run cameras and on stage and everything, he gave this heartbreaking story. He said, you know, I've got three kids. I think they were age 14, 10. And then I think his youngest one, he said, is six, I think he said. So he said, there's always like a little bit of a gap there, you know, with those kids, with what the youngest one experiences. And they're always, the youngest one doesn't necessarily relate to what the other ones are talking about and doing and everything. And he said that, he heard outside of his room, his youngest son went inside of his room and said, Alexa, would you play with me?
Wow.
Yeah. And he just teared up, saying, I'm about ready to tear up just talking about it. But
wow,
that's the kind of stuff that younger people, that's the air they're breathing. It's the water they're swimming in. And we don't even know there's any other way. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, and as a parent, I'm actually really optimistic about the next round of parents that are coming behind me. You know, when my children were old enough to do sleepovers at friends' houses, or, you know, after school extracurricular activities, I wanted to be able to contact them. And so what I did is I grabbed an old iPhone from the junk drawer of the kitchen and I powered it up and I gave it to my daughters. The next generation of parents aren't going to do that. And I now realize that that was a mistake. I gave the most powerful consumer device in history to my child, you know? There's been so much work done now. Jonathan Haidt and many others are really giving a way forward on the first phone that you give your child should not be a smartphone. You should not give your child a smartphone before the age of 14 or older. Or Jonathan Haidt says they shouldn't be on social media before 16 or older. Well, there was none of that forward.
Jonathan Haidt is a researcher from Stanford, right? I mean, he's
from New York. Yes.
Okay. I mean, he's got the research chops and just did a deep dive on it. And this is a quote unquote cultural elite probably who doesn't have some conservative agenda. He just looked at what's happened with children and said, we're killing our kids here.
Yes. Yes. He is a Jewish born atheist and is really the end of the spear, the tip of the spear, the Yoda of this space right now. And he is the one that's really ringing the bell on saying that there should be phones should be out of schools. He's saying that kids should not have a smartphone before 14. They should not have social media before 16 and that they need to be outside more having unsupervised play to be problem solving with their friends, to experiencing conflict with their friends, to be doing more adventure kind of games outside. His big thesis is this: we have overprotected our children in the real world, and we have underprotected our children in the virtual world.
So you have this moment with your children that, oh no, they're all saying the same thing.
Yeah,
I've got a problem here. My kids would have said the same thing. You just were much more emotionally aware to even ask the question. You know, good for you. Another reason I look up to you, rat bastard. Just so much better than me in so many ways. But what then was the next step in the progression of acting on a calling? Because I wanted to have you on The Aggressive Life, not only because you're a friend of mine and I want to spend more time with you, but also because you've made moves here. You're not one of these guys who just lamented, oh, this is horrible, the sky's falling. You've actually aggressively did some things, changed some things about your life, and actually started a movement where churches all over the country now are doing digital fasts. So what was the next step in the process?
So I was having lunch with a friend of mine, a guy named Scott Harrison. He leads Charity Water. And we were having lunch together and I said, how you doing? He said, you know, my family and I are about to start do some family therapy together. And he said, but the therapist won't even see us until we do a 30-day screen blackout as a family. No screens for 30 days.
Wow.
And I said, how's it going? He said, we're all 2 or 3 weeks into it. And he said, it's going amazing. My kids listen a whole lot better. Their focus, their attention is a lot better. Like overall, the whole health of our family is so much better as we've been doing this. And then he said, get out your phone. So grab my iPhone. He says, look at your screen time. And so I go on, I look at my screen time and, you know, I'm embarrassed. It's like 6 or 7 hours a day.
No, I never look. That's a horrible exercise. Why would you do that?
And I feel myself ashamed, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, have a look at your notifications. And I didn't know that the iPhone has all of this built in. And I'm like, oh my gosh, my phone buzzed me 267 times yesterday.
Wow.
And I'm looking at all the things why it interrupted me. You know, an Amazon package landed on my front door, or someone liked an Instagram post, or I got an email, or I got, you know, 267 times my phone buzzed me to notify me. And he's like, listen, bro, the first thing you need to do is turn off all those notifications. And Brian, that was about 3 years ago. And I turned off all those notifications then, and I've never turned them back on.
Yep, right.
And, you know, like that was actually a moment there and then I took a very specific step and I never, ever went back.
Yeah.
And like that is like one of the simplest things you can do to take your life back from your smartphone. This was about November when we were meeting, and every year in January, our church does a season of prayer and fasting, and a lot of people were saying to me, well, you know, I'm going to fast from social media, or I'm thinking about fasting from my phone, and I thought, that's a cool idea, but it's a different idea than biblical fasting. Fasting from food is probably the most neglected biblical practice in our modern world.
Yes,
we don't like to do it. We don't like being uncomfortable. We don't like being hungry. And yet it's one of the most powerful and most profound things that you can do to really turn up the voice of God, to really access the presence of God in your life. And so I didn't really want to blend the two together. And so as we were heading into this new year, I said, hey, we're going to be doing prayer and fasting, and you know, this is how we're going to guide you through it. And for those who are thinking about fasting from technology, here's what I want to say to you. In a couple of months, we're going to do it together as a whole church. We're going to do, and I've never done this before, I've never heard of anyone doing this before, but our whole church is going to do a digital detox. And like, let's do it together. And honestly, at the time, Brian, I had no idea what that was even going to look like. I was just kind of making this declaration that 3 or 4 months from now, we're going to do this. And between now and then, I needed to read a bunch of books and do a bunch of research and develop a point of view on how I was going to lead my church through a digital detox. Well, after I did all of that and started getting into all of this, I was very, very nervous about the whole thing because I thought people are going to be looking at me like, why are you talking about this, dude? You know, like, you're a pastor, teach the Bible, stay in your lane. This is sort of out of your jurisdiction, you know?
Yep.
But I just decided I was going to try to do this. I wanted to make a biblical case for why this was important. But this is what I discovered. And I've learned a lot about this since we did it. Social scientists call the problem that we have with addiction to technology a collective action problem. A collective action problem is a problem that society is sharing at large, and we all individually know that this is having a detrimental impact on our mental health, but none of us want to step back from it individually. It's like if you're talking to a teenage girl and you say, well, if Instagram makes you feel so bad about yourself, why don't you get off Instagram? And she says, I can't because all my friends are on it. It's the fear of missing out, right? It's FOMO.
Right, that's like saying why, cultural context would be like saying, why don't you stop going to the playground? That's like saying,
right. If the playground is harming you, then why don't you stop going to the playground, right?
But if that's the only place that you know you meet people,
that's right.
You know? Right.
That's exactly right. It is the doorway to our social life.
Yes.
Now, the way to address a collective action problem is with collective action. And so what happened is when we started doing this as a church, as small groups, as families, you've got teenagers and parents and grandparents, you've got entire teenage small groups. They're all doing a digital fast together. And it turns out that it is much easier to do with everyone else when you're doing it together. You do experience some degrees of withdrawal, but when your friends and family, when your church, when you're all doing it together, it is actually a shared experience. It is a guided way to actually engage this. And the outcome has been so profound in my church and now in many other churches.
So how many of these digital fasts have you done?
So we've done it 2 years in a row, and we're about to do our third next month. So this will be our third coming up.
And the first time you did it, because most of us have never done one, so the first time you do it, what do you do other than what do you do? What do you delete? What can you do? What can you not do? How, one thing you already said, best to find other people to do it. Hopefully your church is doing it if you're in a church or somebody else, communal impact. What else? What's the nuts and bolts?
All right. So this is what I learned. So the first time I did it, I got rid of my iPhone and I used a dumb phone. I used a light phone. And a week or so into this, I realized I just can't participate in American life without a smartphone, or at least it is very difficult to do so. You know, I'd drive downtown and I'd try to find a parking space, and then it's a QR code to pay for your parking, or I can't even get into the building at church. I can't board an airplane. I can't order an Uber. I, you know, like there's just so much of our lives, but it's not all harmful. So as we started developing our point of view, I started to realize that we need to think about the apps on our phone through the lens of distraction versus utility. Not all apps have the same detrimental impact on us. So distraction apps are things like social media and games and news apps and video apps and even email, the things that become wormholes of distraction, the things that when you pull up at the lights, you can't help yourself. You grab your phone and you look down and you just start scrolling, right? You want to get all the distraction apps off of your phone and you want to turn your phone into a utility device. That is phone, text, calendar, a camera, a calculator, board the airplane. You know, when you jump on a Southwest flight and you use the app, you don't then get on the flight and play with the Southwest app for the next 45 minutes, you know? Because right. It's a utility, it's not a distraction. So the call is, in a digital fast, is to remove all of the distraction apps off of your phone. And then what happens is invariably you're going to reach for your phone like a reflex reaction. You're going to open your phone. You're going to realize there's nothing cool to look at and you're going to put it down again. So it's getting all right. of the distraction apps off of your phone. And the way that it works is four movements. The first movement, can I just ask you a question? You're doing 40 days, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I was really challenged. Like, oh man, maybe we should have done 21 or 30 like you initially recommended. I actually didn't want to do 40, but our team said, hey, look, we're in an area of the country where a lot of people are Catholic. They give up something for Lent. Lent is kind of put in there. Let's do that. So that's why we're doing
it. The first year I did it, I did 30. The second year I did 40. Oh. So I've done both.
Okay.
So the digital fast is 40 days. And it is four 10-day movements. The first 10 days is to detach. We want to invite you to detach from all the distraction apps off of your device and detach yourself from the device. When you're at home, don't carry it around with you all the time. Put it in a drawer. Don't use it as an alarm clock. Don't make it the last thing you touch before you go to bed and the first thing you reach for in the morning, right? So detach from the device. The second 10 days is to discover. You start to discover all kinds of things that you've been covering over by distracting yourself with these devices. It turns out, Brian, that when we're sad and when we're anxious and when we're afraid or when we feel shame, that is an unpleasant feeling. And so what we generally do is we grab our phones and we open them and we look at something that is going to help us forget what we were thinking about. We distract ourselves away from uncomfortable feelings. Mm. Well, when you stop doing that, you actually start to notice some things you weren't noticing. You might notice something in your kids or your spouse. You might even notice something in yourself. You also start to rediscover the voice of God, which we have all but silenced because every sort of discretionary gap moment in our day is buried in a glowing rectangle. Instead of saying, Lord, what do you want me to pay attention to right now? Who's the person that I should be seeing? What is the thought or the person that you are dropping into my heart that I need to reach out to? So the second 10 days, you really discover. The third 10 days, you begin to delight. And I was talking to Dr. Jonathan Haidt about this, and he was really excited. And when I finished speaking, he said, can I tell you why the third movement is delightful? He said, the brain science behind this is that the dopamine receptors in your brain reset after a couple of weeks.
Wow.
And we are overstimulating dopamine in our brains with social media.
Dude.
And what happens is dopamine stops working properly in our brains.
Come on.
It stops bringing peace.
Wow.
It stops bringing joy. It stops bringing pleasure. It stops calming anxieties. It stops being effective. So it takes a couple of weeks of depriving that overload. And then your dopamine receptors reset and you actually start to experience the way God has intended our brains to function. You actually experience pleasure again. Mm. And I remember I was in this season and my daughter, who was about 13 at the time, said to me, you know, Dad, come and watch me on the trampoline. And I walked outside and it was so funny, Brian. It was like I could feel the grass under my feet and for whatever reason, I noticed it.
Wow.
And then I walked outside, and there was a gentle breeze, and it was about 71 degrees, and the sun was about to set, and I could hear birds, and then I could hear the squeal of my daughter jumping on the trampoline, and I didn't have my phone with me. And I was so present. I was so aware that I was here, and I was watching something truly sacred in my daughter asking me to watch her. And I had this conscious thought, this is a better life. That's what it's like when you get into the third movement, into delight. The fourth movement is to determine. And the idea is I need to determine what my digital habits are going to be as I come out of these 40 days. And we encourage people to think about their digital life like Marie Kondo helps people clean out their closets. You know who Marie Kondo is?
No.
She helps people simplify their lives by cleaning out and throwing out things in their closets, right?
All right, yeah.
And she has this famous question. She invites people to hold up items of clothing and ask the question, does this item of clothing spark joy? And if it doesn't, you throw it out. And if it does, you keep it. And people are purging their lives and simplifying their lives by using this technique. Well, I want people to Marie Kondo their digital life. And as they are coming out of the digital fast, ask yourself the question, does putting TikTok back on my phone spark joy? Does putting Instagram back on my phone spark joy, or Facebook or Twitter? I'm not saying you should never go on social media again. What I'm advocating for is maybe it shouldn't be on your phone so that you're not looking at it 63 times a day.
Yeah.
These smartphones have become appendages on our bodies. And the challenge is to try to regulate our consumption of these devices, because they're always there and it is like visual candy. And when you consume too much candy, how do you feel? You feel sick and kind of ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, the way you feel when you've been doom scrolling for 65 minutes.
Yeah, I don't use X, formerly known as Twitter. At some point, we have to stop saying that. But I don't use X, so that's going to be an easy delete. Facebook, I use Facebook, but mainly it's for utilitarian reasons to reach people who I want to reach. It's not necessarily for personal enjoyment, so delete one. That one's not too hard. Instagram is the one I really enjoy. I love the ads. They give me ads that are exactly what I want. it serves me up content that I'm gonna miss that one. But I'll tell you one that I'm really, really freaked about. I'm really freaked about deleting YouTube. That's where all my screen time is, YouTube. And right. I haven't taken a dump without my phone for 15 years. I don't even know if my rectum works if I'm not holding a phone in my hand. honestly, I don't know the word. I could be turtle dogging it, a prairie dogging it, turtling it, going to the bath like, oh, I hope I make it. Oh, where's my phone? And I'll risk it and turn around and go find my phone, because I cannot sit and not watch car restoration videos or hunting videos. I'm concerned about that one.
Right, right. And that will be a part of detaching. And once you get through that season of discomfort,
Dirt, you like that?
You will find some dirt, joy on Dirt's the other side.
Laughing. Whenever I can make Dirt laugh, you like that, Dirt?
I'm still laughing about Evan.
You like getting dirty. Like what'd you like about that, Dirt? The prairie dog, and then I have your prairie dogging?
All of it.
All right. Okay. I also love my Australian friend. I love what I break him out of his like nice, proper Nashvillean Christian ways. It's real wonderful.
That's amazing. That's amazing. No, I was together with all of your listeners and viewers, just imagining you with your pants around your ankles, staring at your phone.
Oh, my feet are numb every time I go take a dump. They're always numb after about 15 minutes because I'm not putting that phone down. I might be cleaned out, but no, I have got to watch another video. No,
I got to finish this.
I've learned how to walk with two numb feet. That's how bad it is.
What a gift.
It is a gift. God bless America and Australia. This is fantastic, Darren. This is just great. I've been stolen from in some ways that I haven't even realized. You mentioned in your outline, which I preached this weekend, and I didn't know this. I thought word The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Steal is klepto, which from the word kleptomaniac, where we get it, but it's a secretly steal. Steal in such a way that someone doesn't even know. And so when you talk about walking outside and seeing the trampoline and hearing the squeak and the birds, I'm going, I've probably been stolen from. I don't even notice it. I'm pretty confident I'm not as aware and in the moment of beautiful things. So I'm probably going to find that out.
Yeah.
So you would not say that this is a calling on your life. You're saying that this is a season where you're called to this. How would you put this?
I don't know, Brian. You know, like, this is a relatively new phenomena. I don't know how it's going to evolve. Certainly, I find myself very passionate about this. As a pastor, I just think about how much these devices are discipling people in the way of the world. You know, I think about Romans 12, you know, do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. I don't think there has ever been a device in the history of the world that is better at conforming people to the image of the world than the smartphone. I mean, you're carrying it around with you 24 hours a day, and you're accessing it. I mean, the numbers don't even shock us anymore when you hear that people are on their phones 8 hours or 9 hours or 10 hours a day.
Right.
You know, and we kind of like, yeah, that sounds about right. And you're like, well, people are awake for about 16 hours a day.
Right.
And 60% of their waking time is staring at a device.
Right.
You know, if something doesn't change, the next generation is going to be the first generation in history that will die with more of other people's memories than their own. Mm.
When I was growing up, the TV was just starting to become a really big thing. Yes, I'm 59. I mean, 2U was around longer than when I was born. But I mean, becoming central to the home. I'm talking about color TV coming in. I remember when we first got our first color TV, it was a 19-inch RCA TV. You didn't have cable at that point. You just had basic channels, all that stuff. But the gold standard, or the danger zone that culture accepted as danger, is if you watched more than 2 hours of the quote-unquote boob tube, the boob tube. If you did more than 2 hours, you're really in danger. Something not good is happening. How about eight now? 10, 12? Right. Which, by the way, watching Netflix, is that as dangerous? You recommend everyone done with Netflix for this 40-day fast? I hope not. Please say no. Go ahead.
I would definitely say not on your phone.
Okay.
So don't have Netflix on your phone.
Yeah.
There are some people who do a complete screen blackout, so they don't watch TV at all, and I applaud that. The more that you do in this, the more benefit you will get. I think the problem is the smartphone. For the most part, the problem is the smartphone. People generally aren't spending 12, 14 hours a day watching Netflix 7 days a week. They just don't, the television doesn't follow them around. They don't sit in the bathroom and watch television, you know?
Yeah, right. The TV doesn't sneak up on me. You know, I sit down and say, I'm going to watch Gold Rush.
Exactly. So it is, and statistically, nowhere near as harmful either. There wasn't a mental health crisis with television. And there wasn't a mental health crisis with flip phones either, by the way.
Great point.
It is the smartphone. You know, as Dr. Gene Twenge said, it's the smartphone, obviously. And for a long time, there was not conclusive research. There was like, I think there could be a correlation between social media and smartphones and mental health. Could be a correlation, but not a causation. Well, now the jury is in, bro. I mean, it is absolutely clear that the causation of this mental health crisis, the epidemic that we're dealing with, particularly with teenagers and young adults, is rooted in the smartphone.
Oh, dude, you're ringing my bell. You're bringing me a different angle that I hadn't even considered, because I've talked with a lot of people in the past saying the phrase mental health, where did this even come from? Like, this was never talked about, when I was growing up and when I was in my 20s, because it just wasn't a thing.
That's right.
There was certainly some people who get freaked out, some people who were, you know, would have depression. I mean, that's always existed to a degree, but never to the amount that it is that we now have a whole categorization called mental health. That'd be like talking about having toenail health. Like, what? Okay, right. I guess so. Right. And I've never understood, where did this come from? How is it that we catch bipolar? Some people seem to catch bipolar like they catch a cold and then they commit suicide, as was the case with my cousin. How is it? Yeah, horrible stuff. I've just been racking my brain as a pastor who interacts with people. I don't understand why people are hurting so much. Is it the hormones in our food? Is it the whatever? Is it probably maybe a little of all of it? But I never connected till just now. Like, yeah, I've been asking that question since we've been addicted to our smartphones.
Yeah, well, you see, the other thing is, when you were in middle school, we all had an experience at some point where we walked into a cafeteria or we walked into a playground and there was no place for us. Yeah. And there was nowhere to, and we felt rejected, you know? We felt like, yes, we didn't fit in, or we felt judged, or we felt not good enough. And so everyone's had that experience, and it's a really troubling and hurtful kind of experience. Imagine the possibility of that experience happening any time of the day. You're in your bedroom and you got your phone and there's a text thread going on and a 14-year-old boy says something disparaging about you and it's in front of your whole class on text messaging. You are carrying the possibility of that rejection or hurt or even looking for validation externally as your brain is developing. That possibility can happen any time of the day because you're carrying your phone with you.
So it's like being picked last in the kickball game for the gym class multiple times a day.
That can always happen. There's a possibility of that always happening.
Wow.
What does that do to people?
Wow. Do you think that there is a way out of this? I know individually we can all take control of our life. You can choose to do a fast. You can choose to reset. We want to encourage people to do that. We're going to have you give like specifics in a moment where people would start. But do you think culturally there could be any way out of this? Or is this just going to be one of those things where there's going to be a few nomads who are going to break from culture, regardless of what their religion or whatever is, and we're just going to be different, and the rest of the culture is going to just struggle with stuff that those of us who choose a different path aren't going to struggle with. What do you think is going to happen?
I'm actually quite optimistic that there is a lot of innovation and there is a lot of appetite for help. When it comes to digital media consumption, there's got to be somewhere in between addiction or Amish, right? There's got to be some way of engaging in this in a way that's healthy. And everyone feels that, you know, like I love talking about this because I don't have to convince anyone this is a problem. Yeah. Everyone knows it's a problem, right? And so I'm excited to see a lot of innovation around this. My friends, Joey and Heath, developed Aro, which is a digital wellness app where you're measuring time away from your phone. I think that is great.
It's fantastic. I've been using it for a week. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. There's a lot of tools on the iPhone that can be limiting your screen time, and it can be preventing you from being able to access certain things. The thing is, The problem that we have with this consumption is the same problem we have with overeating or with, you know, it's just too much too often. And so we have to learn to be restraining ourselves. We are terribly addictive creatures. Yes. And we drink too much alcohol and we take drugs and we eat junk food and we do the things that bring us pleasure. that ultimately harm us. And then part of maturing is to be creating an infrastructure that is going to help you make better decisions, even when you feel weak.
Yeah.
And so a digital fast, or even having certain restraints or certain guidelines attached to your digital life, allow you to make decisions that are ultimately going to produce health and life rather than addiction and, you know, depression.
Well, it would be great if culture as a whole could make the turn. I don't have high hopes for that. I think it's going to be one where there's the people who choose a different path. And I think it's, not to get biblical here, I think it's going to be the narrow path. And then there's going to be most who are going to be on the wide road to destruction, speaking of mental health.
Yeah, well, but I do see pockets of optimism. You know, like parents who are younger than me are doing better than I did, because I had no idea that this was going to be so harmful to my kids.
Yeah, that's a good word.
So parents that have got kids younger than me, they're not giving their kid an iPhone 11, because there's really been too many people now that have gone, oh, I wish I had not done that.
Right.
And so if they want to contact their kids, they give them a dumb phone or a flip phone or whatever it is, a phone that just makes phone calls. And so the first phone that kids are getting is not going to be a phone that's loaded up with social media at the age of 11. So there is progress, because parents will sacrifice a lot for the betterment of their children. And so I am seeing pockets of progress on this. And I think the fact that we are having this conversation is more of like, we're talking about what is the impact on society at large. You know, how are people developing socially? How is the next generation able to have conversations or have work ethic or eye contact? You know, we're having this conversation because the stakes are really, really high. And generally, society produces solutions when there is a pain point that is having a, you know, pretty detrimental impact. So I feel hopeful. I don't think things are going to change quickly.
So in the meantime, until they do change, and I'm glad that you're more positive on this than I am. I just don't see Americans having virtually any self-discipline for things like this, and I don't see even the political landscape aligning to get any sort of legislation. It's like we're at war with everything, and I'm not hopeful. I'd love to be wrong. So I love your
Did you see that the Aussies passed legislation that you can't have social media before the age of 16?
I did see that, but don't you think there's some changes in Australian culture than American culture?
Yeah, and there's a lot that would say that that's not the right thing to do, because as soon as you make something illegal, it makes it more attractive for minors. So, we're just going to have to wait and see how does history, like what happens in this experiment?
So you're saying—
Look at data.
So you're saying maybe 16-year-olds— will be so starved for it that when they turn 16, they'll get really unhealthy or something like that? Is that one of the possibilities?
That's certainly possible. Well, I mean, kids are brilliant at workarounds with technology.
Yeah.
And right. So a 13-year-old hearing that they're not allowed to have social media till they're 16 doesn't stop most 13-year-olds.
Right.
So it just perhaps makes it even more attractive. They're like, what's so wonderful about it that I'm not allowed to do it?
So let's say I'm listening to this podcast. So I'm going, there's some really compelling things here. I need to make an aggressive move. It's called the aggressive life. So there's probably a number of people who just say, I'm going to err on the side of activity. I'm going to err on the side of action instead of err on the side of, well, I don't know if that's for me. Well, it's a good thing to think about. Maybe some people are convinced like right now, okay, I need to do a fast. Tell us what we do. One's not thing already. Probably identify a group you can do this with together. If you're part of a church that's going to do this, or maybe you have some other friends who could listen to this podcast and say you want to try this together, that's probably step one. Just give the nuts and bolts. What next?
Yeah. So I think that the first thing is you want to come up with a plan. You want to work out how long are we going to do this for? You could do it for a week. You could do it for 3 weeks. You could do it for 40 days, like your church is going to be doing it. And then from there, I would say a couple of key things to begin with. Buy an alarm clock so that you're not using your phone you don't have it by your side while you sleep. It's really difficult for it not to be the last thing you look at and the first thing you grab for in the mornings when it's by your side. So have a place in your home where you charge your devices and make it not your bedroom. So that's the first thing. I would make sure you turn off all notifications and maybe with the exceptions of your phone ringing and maybe text messages. Turn everything else off. Stop having your phone interrupt you all the time.
Yep.
And then delete all the distraction apps off of your phone, or you can use a piece of technology called Brick. Brick is another piece of technology that you can use. It's cheap. I think it's $59, and you can actually choose the apps that you don't want to be using, and you can brick them so that you can't use them for a period of time.
Brick them. This is a physical device you stick to your phone? What do you mean brick?
It is. Huh. Yeah. Hang on. I'll show it to you.
All right. Interesting.
This is called Brick.
Oh, okay. It's like a charger thing.
It's a, it
looks like
magnetic.
It. Yeah.
And it's just a one-time fee. There's no ongoing monthly charges for it or anything. But you touch your phone to it, and you brick all of the apps that you don't want to use.
You set it up ahead of time. Which ones
you set up ahead of time, so you can set up a digital fast. I don't want to be able to access social media, any games, news apps, video apps, email. I want to make sure that I can't use any of those. And then you touch it on your phone, and it bricks them, and you can't use them again until you unbrick them.
Wow. So that device doesn't suck your phone the whole time. It's just one touch.
Just one touch. Yeah.
Fascinating.
And then if you leave it at home.
Interesting.
And then you go to the office, you cannot access those apps.
Wow. I'm going to have to get that for every staff member. Imagine the productivity.
We get so much more done now.
People actually did work at work.
I just bought 200 of them.
Did
to
you?
Give to my staff. Yeah. So the other thing you can do is just delete all of your distraction apps, right? Delete Instagram, delete TikTok, delete Facebook and X, and delete all these apps. And then when it comes to getting like Safari off of your iPhone, if you're an iPhone user, you need to go into Screen Time, and then you just need to toggle the thing that says, I don't want Safari, and then Safari will disappear off your phone as well. So you turn your phone into a utility device.
You find that the web is a distraction for people?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can access all your social media through your web as well.
Okay, if you're going to, okay, yeah, all right, okay.
You know, I mean, you can, if you've got a web browser, you can work around, you know.
But I'm not going to turn off ChatGPT.
No, I mean.
Right?
Who would write your sermons?
right, exactly.
So from there, I would then just encourage people to do this as a community, to do it with one another. And, if you want to follow a format, you know, the Digital Fast is a book, and we have a workbook that you can follow for that as well. But it will sort of guide you through the four different movements, and you can do that together. You can detach and discover and delight and determine what things are going to be like when you get on the other side of the Digital Fast. And you can learn more about that at thedigitalfast.com.
Well, that was the next question I was going to ask. Where do we go to learn more and connect with this? So that's at digitalfast.com?
Thedigitalfast.com has all kinds of information and resources and sort of best practices, and you can buy the book, or you can even buy the book on bulk if you want to buy it for a bunch of people.
Any other website? Of course, you're not going to give us a social media account to go look at, but is there any place else you would point us, Darren?
Digital Fast 2025 is .com is the center if you want your church to go through this together. And we have a ton of resources now. We have about 300 churches that are going through this now.
That's fantastic.
And the exciting thing about it is that, you know, I was the only one that did it for the first couple of years, but now a lot of people who are smarter than me are getting in on creating resources as well. And so we have resources available for pastors, lots of sermons, more small group curriculum, designs on slides, branding, like all kinds of stuff you could need for your church. And it is way beyond just my church now. Now hundreds of churches are starting to contribute. And as pastors, we are like sharing our ideas on how we can lead our church to it. And perhaps one of the most exciting things is coming up this summer. I have a friend in Kansas City, and Randy Frazee is his name, and he is getting 200 churches to do it in Kansas City together.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
So the city is doing a digital fast together, and that might turn out to be tens of thousands of people
all
going on this journey, and I'm going to be flying in, and we're going to do a citywide rally, and we're going to initiate a big digital fast that's citywide.
Well, if I could just brag on my friend here for a little bit, I don't do a lot of things that are pre-packaged for a couple reasons. One, I normally am not impressed by the quality of it. That's not the case with your stuff. Quality is really, really high. Or B, if I go with that, the folks I've talked with, they're very protective of their branding, of their content. They're like, you're going to use it our way, you're not going to use it at all. And you've been very, very open-handed. You've worked with us great. We've created our own sort of devotional on our own app, which is much, much, much of your content that you're allowing us to cherry pick and create. You turn us on to your friends who do Aro. I'll give them a plug. They were on the podcast a while ago. It's an amazing app, Aro. You need to get it. I've just been using it for a week. It's cool already. It basically gamifies putting your phone down and not using it.
It's
fun. And you're done going, oh, wow, I've regained this many hours this week in social time and fitness time and whatever. It's really, really good. So you've just served us all really well, Darren, by having a quality product, ringing the bell on something nobody was ringing before on a spiritual formation element and being open to innovation and all that stuff. You're just a good dude, man. That's why you're one of my favorite people, and I just want to spend more time with you.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, man. I really care about this. I think that these devices have seeped their way into their lives, and the detrimental impact is in so many areas. And I love the opportunity that the church could have to be leading the way forward in a widespread societal problem. This is not just a Christian problem or a faith problem. This is a problem for everyone. And whenever I ask someone, have you ever done a digital detox? Almost everyone says the same thing. No, but I need to.
Right.
So they feel it. And I love the fact that the church could provide some leadership.
Right.
And say, well, you know, someone's always been meaning to do a digital detox of some sort, and now my church is going through it, and they're kind of like, all right, well, if not now, then when? Like, I just need to do it now. And it has spread way beyond just churches. I mean, Christian schools have been doing it, and sports teams have been doing it, and neighborhoods have been doing it, because everyone knows this is a problem, and everyone wants to find some sort of practical way forward. And to see the church leading that makes me very happy indeed.
All right. Hey, look, I think we've given the call to action. The website again, Darren, is?
TheDigitalFast.com.
Hey, folks, come on. We all bitch about this. We all do. We see these things of walking around like dorks looking down on our phones. If you're someone who's worked out for 20 years, you're as pissed off as I am about people sitting on machines and looking at their phones without working in. You're horrified by what it's doing with our children or what it's doing to us and our interaction with our children. All of us know this. Very few people are doing anything about it. So let's do something about it. Let's be the ones who try something different. Let's work on it instead of philosophize about it. That's the info. Thank you, Darren. Let's make something happen. We'll see you next time on The Aggressive
Life. Love you, brother.
Love you too, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and more at bryantome.com. My new book, a 60-day devotional called The 5 Marks for Man, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, along with all the other books in the 5 Marks library, are open right now on Amazon. Be sure to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Then send an email to dirt@bryantome.com to get a free Aggressive Life sticker. Find more on Instagram @bryantome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.